Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minutes past the hour, and yes, we are a little bit late getting started. Howdy. I said that part. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That, of course, is where you'll find news stories, you'll find pop-up flare, you'll find entrance to the chat room, which is a darn good time. Wander on by the chat room if you have never been there before. You will enjoy the camaraderie. And also, of course, the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com PayPal button, which is what we use to keep all of this going, in conjunction, of course, with the traditional mail service address that you will also find at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. We pulled up just $40 short last night, $40 shy of of Robert's up over down under challenge for the 20th of the month. And hopefully we'll make up that shortfall, as well as the evening's fundraising goal. So we're looking for 19 folks at $10 a piece. What else, math wise? 19 at 10, 38 at 5. Oh goodness me, 190 is a strange number. 2 at 95, yeah. Whatever. But anyway, that's what we look for in order to keep this entire effort at independent broadcasting up and running. And sorry I was a little bit late getting to the microphone. Unfortunately, well, I had a meeting over in Beckley that ran a little bit long, and I beat a hasty path back here from there. But not quite hasty enough. Anyway, just the same, it is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. It is Earth Day, not only on the Horn, but other places as well. And as much or anything else, it's my beloved Agnes's birthday. She is 29. Again. And so, happy birthday wishes out to Agnes. Titanic Tuesday. Well, of course, we celebrate on Titanic Tuesday the Titanic intellect of the right wing in this country, which sort of goes hand in hand, if you think about it, with, say, Moran Monday. It's a nice transition. It's a good segue. And I think we have some Titanic intellects. Remember, there was once upon a time a right-wing, 972nd tier right-wing goober over in Beckley who would answer all manner of questions from his entirely ignorant, snake-handling, strychnine-swigging, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking listeners, and once explained that there were fossilized shellfish in the rock strata of West Virginia as a result of the movement of the Titanic plates. That never gets old. Never. We're still waiting to find out what happens when the Titanic jello mold moves, but, all things in their time, right? But it is Earth Day, and hopefully you marked it or celebrated it somehow or another. And I hope it was a Jim Dandy Earth Day, has been, continues to be. Let's see. What all do we have here this evening? A nice little group gathering up in the chat room. Jump on in if you want. Good evening, Jan. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. Good evening, of course, to Sparky. Truth Seeker is in the room, as is Waggy. More to follow later in as the program gets further underway, if folks didn't just assume that nothing was going on. Because something is. Let's start out with a little bit of a giggle. I saw this on my Facebook page last night. This may very well be the best response yet crafted to the entire foolish right-wing teabaggery of the Cold Civil War Bundy standoff. In particular, what this boils down to, this is an announcement by Sean Sheely in regard to Bundy Fest. Sean Sheely is a progressive activist, and I guess also related to the Burning Man Festival that takes place not too awfully far away. Never mind the setup. Just listen. By the way, there's some might be some words in here that little Timmy and little Cindy don't need to hear, but okay.
And folks, Sean Sheely here with some really exciting news. Now, for years, we have paid all sorts of permitting fees and obeyed all sorts of rules in order to hold Burning Man on the playa, and that has been wonderful. But now, thanks to this man, Hero Cliven Bundy, we have achieved a whole new level of freedom. Today we are announcing Bundy Fest. Let me tell you how this is going to work. Bundy has declared the entire area surrounding his Nevada ranch as a completely rules-free zone. Anything goes. So on September 5th, just after the conclusion of Burning Man, we're going to begin Bundy Fest. That's 240 bands playing all night and all day, 24 hours a day, at the protest zone here right across from beautiful scenic Bundy Ranch in Bunkersville, Nevada. Now, some people have asked me, where will we camp? Where will we park? Anywhere, really. It's fucking anarchy! Anywhere you want to park, camp, anything you want to do. Jugglers, artists, street performers of every kind. I do want to mention that we're clothing optional and gay friendly. So anything you want to bring, folks, all the way around this area. We're expecting about 50,000 people from Burning Man. And swing on down to Las Vegas, have yourself a buffet. Come on up to Bunkersville and into Bundy's Fest. Look for us on the website. We're going to have BundyFest.org up shortly. Like us on Facebook. We've got the event page up there. Should mention there's going to be no bathroom facilities there. Of course, you're free at this point to just let it all hang out anywhere. Just like Bundy's cattle, you know, you can do it right there in the Virgin River if you want to. You're better than cows, aren't you? I just want to say again, you should stop by and thank Cliven Bundy for the sacrifice he made. You know, this man was willing to allow his cattle to roam and eat for free on the public properties and to herd for free on public land, really at a sacrifice of himself. It's a really remarkable thing, and we owe this man all of the freedom that we have to have Bundy Fest. So come on out September 5th to October 5th. Hell's Angels, we're expecting the L.A. Gay Men's Choir, just everybody, anybody, come on out and have fun at Bundy's Fest. We'll see you there.
And why wouldn't you? I mean, the Hell's Angels and the L.A. Gay Men's Choir? Has there ever been a bill quite as appealing as that? And, of course, Sean Sheely has a point, doesn't he? Of course he does. That's why he screamed, "It's effing anarchy." Because that's what Cliven Bundy wants. Of course, we still haven't sorted out that whole business about how his family was there first. Still waiting for a representative of First Peoples to straighten out Cliven Bundy on that issue. September 5th to October 5th, clothing optional. No restrooms. What was interesting is when I saw it last night on Facebook page, it brought out the weirdos, I mean like crazy. I started just wandering back into the up thread on the comments, which were legion by then, and the little Bundyites and the Cravenistas and the teabaggers and the libertarians and the birchers and the birthers and the deathers and the booger eaters and the igamfoos and the Republicans and the libertarians were just going bananas. By the time I started reading the thread, they were talking about engaging in cannibalism, you know, killing the progressives and butchering them and roasting them and eating them. No, really, that's where the modern Confederacy finds itself, because they are titanic idiots. I really hope this happens, and I hope the bands playing are really, really loud. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for a month. Because, well, freedom. So why not? Wolverines! Only with, you know, walls of Marshall Stack amplifiers. Yay. Can this really happen? Wouldn't it be fun if it did? Yeah, I think so too. But these weirdos are apparently propagating like mushrooms after a spring rain. Jeebus. One of these sovereign citizens has now been dinged. He declared Glenn Unger, not Felix, Glenn, calls himself a sovereign citizen and has scammed the IRS out of $36 million. He was sentenced to 8 years in federal prison today. District Judge Thomas McAvoy said Mr. Unger is trying to do everything in his power to bring down the United States of America. There's no surer way to tear down this country than from the inside, and that's exactly what he tried to do. Unger is now 62 years old. Of course, and why not? Of course, during his sentencing hearing, Glenn Unger held a Bible and babbled, really there's no other word for it, babbled on and on about how dedicated he is in his life to Jesus Christ, and then went into that sort of pornographic detail about the execution of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi that the fundies get off on so much. More on that in a second. And looked at the judge and said, "This prosecution has been the best thing in my life." Because, you know, because trying to scam the federal government out of $36 million is just like the crucifixion of Jesus. He also forgave the judge for following the law. By the way, Unger was an orthodontist. What is it about medical professionals who begin with O? You got Glenn Unger, libertarian orthodontist. And, of course, you have Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, who, rather than be certified by the American Board of Ophthalmology, invented his, because he was too cheap and it was infringing on his liberty to have to be board certified to go poking around inside people's eyeballs. Oh, God. The judge, on the other hand, after being forgiven, said, while he espouses his love for people who are underprivileged, he's willfully Steeland's central... Mr. Unger, by the way, did not go by Mr. Unger. He was Dr. Sam Kennedy. Oh, brother. He even founded a sovereign citizens group. They were called the Guardians of the Free Republic. Brother. But, I mean, it's Titanic Tuesday. I said more on the bloody and graphic here in a minute. Yeah, we really didn't get into the heart and soul of the post-Easter Moran parade yesterday. So we can catch up with some of that right now. This story comes out of the state of Floridistan. And it's the story of a man who decided to celebrate Easter. Oh, dear. By making himself look real bloody and gory and crucifying himself fakely by the side of the road. This happened in Lee County, Florida. There were lots of people driving by on the road. Near accidents transpired. The sheriff noted there were a lot of close calls with accidents and traffic backups. The man was pretty near naked, pretty near being a unit of measurement down south. He'd bloodied himself up with stage makeup. And he went on to say things like, Easter is not about bunny rabbits. This is what our Christ endured for us, for our sins. And to hide that is not to live to the true faith of what he did for us. It's just one of those necessities. Of course, some people thought the guy was in the right. And I'm sure he thinks he now feels like he's been completely and totally persecuted. Yeesh. One woman said, kids need to see how he was born and hung from the cross for us. Really? They did that the day he was born? Who knows? Jesus is appropriate for everywhere. The only problem is, of course, the fake blood, fake nails, no... just another fraud. But they get off on the gore porn. I don't understand why, but they do. And it goes on from there. We will have a busy little evening. Let's see. That may be a bit too much for this for early in the program. Let's go back. Hey, how about a giggle? Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Why do I say that? Well, we have our friends at Right Wing Watch to thank for why we say that. Lee Francis. Or Marion.
Well, it's just blind luck that the Earth hasn't experienced a catastrophic impact from asteroids big enough to wipe out a city. That's the warning from three former NASA astronauts. Universe Today reports they will present new evidence Tuesday that Earth has had far more asteroid impacts in the last decade than previously thought, 3 to 10 times as many. The evidence comes from a nuclear weapons test warning network. It found that there have been 26 huge explosions since 2001, all of which came from asteroid impacts, and none of them were detected ahead of time. The group supports a mission to find and track asteroids decades in advance to deflect them from hitting the Earth, which we all hope they will be successful at, Pat.
I wrote a book. It's called The End of the Age, and it deals with an asteroid hitting the Earth. I don't see anything else that fulfills the prophetic words of Jesus Christ other than an asteroid strike. There isn't anything that will cause the seas to roil, that will cause the, you know, skies to darken, the moon and the sun not to give their light, that nations terrified on Earth of what's happening. There isn't anything that's going to do that. My asteroid was 1 kilometer. It was 0.6 miles, and that was enough to bring a worldwide collapse. If we had one that was a mile in diameter, and that's just a big old hunk of space rock. It isn't anything sophisticated. It's just a great big hunk of rock, and there are millions of them out in space surrounding. And mercifully, we've got a planet named Jupiter that pulls a lot of that stuff in that's bigger than we are, so it has a gravitational pull, but we're big enough to draw some of them in. And as somebody said, it's blind luck. Well, it's the mercy of the Lord. But if that mercy ever got lifted, if you read what Jesus said, get your Bible and read what Jesus said. He said, except those days would be shortened, there'll be nobody living on the face of the earth. That's what it says. That's what Jesus himself said. So, hey, just get ready, get right, and stay right with the Lord. It could be next week, or it could be 1,000 years from now. But nevertheless, we want to be ready at whatever time the Lord says, I'm wrapping it up, and it's time to come home. Terry?
Well, up next.
Yeah, that's great, Pat. Don't forget the Aricept before bed, buddy. Only an asteroid? How about a volcano? How about something like a Krakatoa event? Could that do it? Or how about the super volcano under Yellowstone? Maybe? Possibly? A little bit? For instance, when the volcano goes on the Big Island of Hawaii, isn't there some sea roiling going on? It is nice to hear the word roiling getting a little bit of truck. I think that's an underused word. So thanks again to former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson for putting roiling back into circulation. Good observation coming in from our dear sister Jude out in the Northwest. Could it be the universe views Earth as a clear and present danger, especially with the likes of Pat Robertson's voice as being transmitted, you know, out there? I can't tell you how often I worry about what the aliens are watching and listening to. I mean, Jesus! One episode of the Dukes of Hazzard could be, you know, that goes into the wrong alien ears, or, you know, visual sockets or whatever they may or may not have, globules. We're toast. Of course, that may be the case with most television. Can you imagine the the alien strange peoples of Norblap 9 and the temples that they've probably built to flush Flemball, worshipping their great jiggling god. Yeah, horror inducing, you know. Hey, stand by, time out, just a sec. Just having a little off-air conversation with the lovely Agnes.
Hello, folks.
The mic can't hear you, dear. Okay. She said hello, folks. by the way, I mentioned a little bit ago Cliven Bundy. And I had a note via Skype from Asa a couple of minutes ago. back to the Bundy goob, Bob. Not sure if someone else has already brought this up, but just in case, the whole my family has been here since the 1800s is a complete fabrication. Bundy's family moved from Arizona to Nevada, and his dad purchased the property in 1948. But let's not let the facts get in the way, because, you know, he's a hero and a patriot. Wolverines! Bundy's! Bumpuses. Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna. We're gonna be at it for a while this evening. So there it was, Sunday. Agnes and Ferg and Margie and I spent Sunday driving back from Washington, D.C., but apparently and through the old Dominion of Virginia stand, too, no less. this is a story out of somewhere near Richmond. Now, the west end of Richmond, just imagine. And this is without regard to whether or not, this is neutral as to how one celebrates Easter. It's just the reality of, well, you know, parents, grandparents maybe, Easter Sunday morning, getting up before the precious little youngins awake. And, oh, any precious little youngins in the audience? If so, tell them to go change the shoelaces in their shoes or send anything for anybody. No, okay, little Timmy, little Cindy, out of the room. No, Uncle Bob's not going to use any of the bad words. We're just going to talk about some grown-up stuff. It'll be totally boring. Go change your shoelaces. Do we still have shoelaces? Yes, we still have shoelaces. Anyway, you get up early, you go and, in the olden days, one dyed eggs to pretty pastel colors and went and hid the boiled eggs. But really, little kids don't have that much interest in boiled eggs in the first place, because that's what they are. When I was a little kid, after Easter was over, we would then peel the eggs and my mother would pickle the same. She always had a big, like, gallon jar of pickled beet, vinegar, brine, whatever, and in go the Easter eggs. Ultimately, my dad was the ultimate beneficiary of Easter because he loved pickled eggs. Me, not so much. But anyway, so you do that as a parent or a grandparent or whatever because of it's the same joy and excitement that transpires on Christmas Day among Christians and perhaps, you know, I don't know, other holidays for other religions. Young'un's early onset juvenile diabetes, you know, that kind of thing. Whatever. And so your young'uns go out to do their Easter egg hunting. Well, this is what happened in an area of Richmond. And apparently, the Klan got out ahead of Granny and Grandpa, or Mom and Dad, and did some Easter egg hiding of their own in a little neighborhood there on the West End. A story from WRIC in Richmond features commentary from Brandon and Jackie Smith. They went Easter egg hunting with their 3-year-old son on Sunday afternoon, this past Easter afternoon. Well, let's go to WRIC for the explanation.
Parents in the West End are outraged after waking up to find Easter eggs filled with racist notes. Claudia also has this story from the College Hill neighborhood.
You can hit the whole world with the internet. Stay out of my yard.
The Smiths were having an egg hunt with their 3-year-old son, an Easter Sunday tradition interrupted after an upsetting discovery.
My husband noticed the last Easter egg, and I knew that wasn't one of the ones I'd put out. He picked it up, and we opened it, and it's got the white supremacist stuff in it.
Inside the egg was the message, "Diversity is white genocide," saying, quote, "Mass immigration and forced assimilation of non-whites into our lands is genocide."
It's absurd.
Brandon Smith went around their College Hill neighborhood looking for more of the eggs and alerting parents so other children wouldn't find them.
We don't want other kids who can read and being like, "Hey, Mommy, what's the Million Man White March?" Or, you know, "What's the White Genocide Project?" Most of us don't want to explain genocide to our 6-year-olds.
It's very disturbing knowing that my son is walking around the yard a lot and finding that, and just that something that he may find and have questions about that not necessarily at his age that I want to have to explain to him that there are people in this world who don't think everyone is equal.
Florida, why would...
Is that, why would somebody do that? Why here? Because it's the Klan, for God's sakes. It's just who and what they are. So, yeah, you know now, the message inside, I mean, you know, a little strip of paper, kind of like a fortune cookie, only filled with racism, bigotry, and hate. Diversity equals white genocide. Now, that phrase is making the rounds these days. These asshat clowns have latched on to this idea that somehow racial diversity is white genocide. Now, then a cigarette and then shouting fire. Kind of a pity, really. Well, no, we're not going to say that because we're nonviolent here. Diversity equals white genocide. Can we kind of go down through that for? Because what happened in this program primarily most evenings lately. And there is absolutely nothing else here utilizing any internet. well, I mean, there's Skype and the stream and pretty much, you know, like clips, but that's it. And remember, these miserable effing Klansmen, had to trespass on private property to hide these eggs. And I'm really proud to see that, because Dave is an excellent journalist, and his skills at ferreting out racism and eliminationism and homicidal urges on the part of various and sundry white folks all around the country will be put to very... I don't know how long he's been there, but I'm glad he is. And Dave is the one who pointed out that Kyle Hunt... sorry. The titanic intellect of the Republican right. He also says at the same time that he is not targeting children. Never mind the fact that there aren't just a hell of a lot of Easter egg hunts for grown-ups. Good God. Can't live with them. Can't send them to the moon. Anybody want to guess that any of these folks in the Old Dominion missed Easter eggs were also there for the unveiling of the giant Confederate flag by I-95? Because I would almost bet on that as an absolute certainty. Wouldn't you? On this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Again, at about 9 minutes before the hour, a reminder, we're trying to raise $190 this evening, trying to keep up with the fundraising for the week. Got a big chunk of all the buffering. I have no idea where it comes from. None whatsoever. And, of course, you're not getting it if you're listening to the... So let's go ahead and take a break. Hopefully we'll have some responses for fundraising this evening, and, of course, some responses to stories thus far, or stories that you want to bring to the program itself. Whatever the program, 304-658-3333, via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. You won't have any problem getting through either way. So jump right in. Let me see here. Wait, this is Tuesday. We should have a report in L.A. You're cracking me up, Bob. Well, I'm glad enough of the program's getting to you, Shorty, to crack you up. Traveling right now, first time using the recommended app, TuneIn Radio. I love it. By the screw religious, hypocristians. Asteroids aren't the only thing. I saw what right-wing demons can do. I was stationed at Elmendorf Air Force Base in Alaska. I know what HAARP does to the weather. I lost my best friend 2 days before his retirement. He was Navy, though. Suicide. He felt responsible for that big tsunami years ago. I remember before he died, he said, "Imagine us standing on the beach right where the sand meets the water. 15 minutes later, we're no longer there. The water's moved further away from us, and we hear this strange sound. Minutes later, in comes a horrific 40-foot wave." He said he couldn't live with himself. Wow. So wander on by the chat room, or call in on the phone lines, or call in on Skype, any way you want to. I'm going to take a break and see if I can sort any of them.
The feather was a failure. mother was a comfort to a doctor and a liar and an Indian chief. The shirt made out of button, blouse, stars, marble, and a baseball game. Got a tattoo on the side of the bridge. Goddamn, my socks are still hard. From a line on the sofa on the night she was over in my backyard. Yeah, we were shooting the breeze down by the side of the road. Down by the side of the road. A father have mercy. We get her the mercy, please. She's almost alone. That's all her hand. We let her play down by the side of the road. Down by the side of the road. Your light flashing on the skirt in a wind. Yonder comes a truck. It drove by to me. And to the field.
Inspired by the fake imitation, phony Jesus crucifying himself in a fake and phony way down by the side of the road. That, of course, is the immortal John Prine. And down by the side of the road. It is exactly 7 p.m. Here on the in the Eastern time zone. The buffering seems to have settled a little bit. I don't know why. I hope it stays that way. Because that... the fact of the matter is, it really does keep much in the way, keep one from... of a flow, if you will. You know, when we talk about Titanic intellect in the right wing, we're not just talking about your average garden variety Lulus like the former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson, or the guy who wants to cause traffic pileups in the name of the crucified Jesus or whatever. there's a lot of Titanic right-wing intellect. Some of it was on display today in the Supreme Court of the United States. And when you want to talk about Titanic intellect, you really just can't not include the SCOTUS and the rat infestation with which we the people currently have to deal. Two moments of Moranity. The first, the sort of get off my lawn Moranity one can expect from right-wing octogenarians and late septuagenarians. That's no slur on. I hope to someday be an octogenarian. I'd like to even be a nonagenarian, maybe a centenarian. I think the odds are long against, but still, I'd like that. Then again, I'm the guy who thinks human life should be at least a half a millennium long so that we could not stumble blindly into quite so many problems. We could go into them with our eyes wide open, and preferably 300 years old. But anyway, we have a rats problem at the Supreme Court of the United States. Robert Salito, Thomas Scalia. Kennedy is a rat, too, but you have to turn the acronym to STARK, and that's not nearly as much fun as rats. But and I really don't have a position on, I think if I thought about it long enough, I would. But a case was argued before the Supreme Court today, the case is ABC versus Aereo. And being as how I live in the wilds of almost level West by God, Virginia, I have never personally experienced Aereo. But apparently it is some means by which a little antenna will broadcast from a DVR type device to your computer or tablet, so that you can watch over-the-air TV in real time on that device. Yes, I know there are other means and methods. Yes, indeed. But this is an attempt at being a commercial enterprise, and I'm fascinated, especially within the context that all corporations are living, breathing persons within the meaning of the Constitution now. Jesus. I'm fascinated that the case was allowed to be styled ABC versus Aereo. Shouldn't it have been Disney versus Aereo? I mean, doesn't Disney own ABC, or did they spin that off? But anyway, ABC does not like the fact that Aereo is turning around ABC content and broadcasting it from somebody's Aereo box to their tablet or their computer monitor, because Lord knows we all need to be able to watch television while we're in the bathtub, or the other things one engages in the bathroom. You have to take the television with you. You never know, you might miss a really good commercial or something. Anyway, ABC is all up it because, we pay billions of dollars to create this programming, and it's unfair for yada, 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 yada. But the real fun came during oral argument. Among other things, people who were sitting in the court watching the proceedings, because remember the proceedings of the Supreme Court of the United States, because he thinks that somehow or another we just wouldn't understand. Because Fat Tony Scalia thinks that he's the only intelligent person in the entire world. you know, that's what happens when you wander around with a piece of barbed wire wrapped around your leg and you and a hair shirt and you beat on yourself in the name of Jesus. Never mind. Or maybe you think you're the only smart person in the universe when you happen to be the son of the head of the We Love Mussolini fan club in America, which he is. Anyhow, he explained to those watching the proceedings that, well, he certainly understood the television box because, well, he knows about that there HBO. No, really. Really, really, really. On the other hand, you have Justice Sonia Sotomayor, and when I read this, I was kind of surprised. And, well, hey, Sonia! Sonia Sotomayor, speaking from the bench, noted that she is the owner of a Roku device. And, of course, of the many, many, many programming options one has via a Roku device, which is a rebroadcast device for internet broadcasts, upon which the horn is listed and available when we are not buffering our tiny little minds out. You know, you can get the horn on a Roku device. Hey, Sonia. No, really, hey. But Justice Breyer, was it, who tried to make analogies to going to a record store to buy records. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Records. I mean, that's not to say that nobody's playing vinyl, and in fact, vinyl is a really it's a distinct and profoundly appreciated niche of the recording industry even to this day, and if I could afford it and still had my humongous vinyl collection that was stolen many and many a year ago, I love vinyl. I love music on vinyl. I used to think it would be really fun to have a radio music program on the internet and just call it Real Vinyl Radio, where you're guaranteed that every track played was from vinyl, and you could do segues and cue up records and, you know, do real radio DJing kind of stuff. But anyway, so the Justice Breyer knows about record stores that aren't there anymore, except for a few places. Awesome little vinyl shop over in Beckley, of all places, called Cheap Thrills Records. And they sell silk-screened posters and tie-dyed T-shirts and stuff, but they've got a nice selection of vinyl, and they'll actually go out there and try to find you stuff if you're, you know, going crazy trying to find it. But imagine that, because I don't know which way he will land, since both of these are corporate persons going after each other. But the future of some element, some portion of broadcasting, is going to be determined by a nasty old man who doesn't like for people to watch what happens inside the Supreme Court. And who doesn't even remotely understand the internet. Doesn't exactly fill you with confidence, does it? On the other hand, the other Titanic intellect is the guy whose name we can't quite fit into spelling rats, and that's Anthony Kennedy. And Michigan, in response, so there's it's kind of a lengthy process. At one point in time, there was a lawsuit to strike down the University of Michigan Law School's use of racial data in compiling or in its admissions process. And, of course, it was brought, that case was brought by some crybaby white person, absolutely mummified in white privilege, who was pissed off that maybe some equally equally intelligent, equally merited person of color had gotten his or her slot in the law school, you know, just because...
Black.
Right. So those standards got struck down, but the court did, but the ruling was such that it allowed for that data to be used at the discretion of the schools. Did a ballot initiative in which something like 58% of those participating in the voting, and God only knows what kind of numbers those were, voted to tell Michigan's universities and colleges and whatnot that race could not be used in making admissions determinations. The ruling came down today 6-2, upholding that piece of institutional brutality. Now, in the real, the right wingers like to say, "Well, this is about real freedom." And being a colorblind society, just like what Dr. King wanted. And judging people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. To the point that, lo and behold, I had another one of those stupid right-wing blast emails today offering me, what does it say? Offering me black activists in favor of ending quotas who are available for comment. Dateline 1D, attorneys and activists with the Project 21 Black Leadership Network are pleased about today's U.S. Supreme Court decision on race preferences. See, that's how they phrase it, preferences, as if one is preferred by virtue of the color of one's skin. Now, I mean, we did have some race preferences in this country for a very long time that still have some nefarious little tentacles wandering around through the culture, one of which periodically shows up in freaking Easter eggs in Richmond, Virginia. And hope the court's latest ruling on race-conscious school admissions policies will become decisive in finally ending government-enforced rules creating arbitrary demographic quotas. Huh. Arbitrary demographic quotas. Oddly enough, there's nothing in this blast email about arbitrary financial quotas, whereby blithering idiots like Eric, did anybody send you a little note saying, "Will you please check this box off if you would like Project 21 to be your black leadership network?" No, I didn't think so. Because they're just a bunch of self-appointed right-wing horses' rear ends. That's the way this always works. Here's a quote from Project 21 co-chairman Horace Cooper, a former professor. "Today, the Supreme Court moved us closer to the colorblind principle that Martin Luther King advocated and that is embedded in the 14th Amendment. I'm pleased that the principle of treating all Americans as the same under the law can go forward in Michigan." So the way this got to the Supreme Court is when this odious piece of filthy legislation passed at the ballot box, in derogation of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Well, the affirmative act. There's in the New York Times, in the New York Times story about the case, there's a graphic, which the New York Times is proud to tell you is interactive, and it charts. Wow, this is getting frustrating. The dadgum buffering. At the University of California, 49% of the state's college-aged residents are Hispanic. And after the affirmative action ban, 11% of freshmen being admitted to the University of California, Berkeley, are Hispanic. In California, 9% of the state's college-aged residents are African-American black, but 2% of Berkeley freshman admissions are black. That's a 7% gap, and then on where Hispanics are concerned, a 38-point gap. There's a 32-point Hispanic gap at UCLA before and after the affirmative action ban. There's a 6% gap in the black population. And the story remains the same at Texas A&M, Florida State, 17-point enrollment gap before and after affirmative action at Florida State for African Americans, 14% gap at Florida, at the University of Florida. There's almost no appreciable difference among Hispanics at the University of Michigan, because 6% of the college-aged residents of Michigan are Hispanic, and 5% of freshmen at the University of Michigan are Hispanic. 19%, however, of Michigan's college-aged residents are black. 5% of the freshmen at the University of Michigan are black. A 14% gap. You know, because all of a sudden we're just making determinations on admission based upon the content of somebody's character. Because everybody knows that whether it's all hopeful black freshmen have a 14 to 38% character gap. See, that's what that is in that color book that jerk at Project 21 was talking about. That's not a race gap. That's a character content gap. I mean, everybody knows that in California, the black folks have a 38% lower character than white folks. In Michigan, the character gap, well, 14 black folks just have 14% less character. Yeah, this is a real Lulu. The 6-2 majority was not monolithic. There were, in fact, 5 separate opinions. And the affirming judge, just see him 1960 in Alabama going down to the ballot box to vote on whether or not Jim Crow and segregation should be got rid of. Of course, it would have been real interesting had the black folks tried to vote on that. But of course, we don't need the Voting Rights Act anymore. Because it's just a great big honking waste of time, because racism is gone in America. What does Charlie Pierce call it? John Roberts' Day of Jubilee. Yeah, folks, she blistered the hides off of wishy-washy Anthony Kennedy. And basically, she said that in the wake of slavery and Jim Crow and what she called recent examples of discriminatory changes to state voting laws, that there should be a special scrutiny for these kind. He may be wishy-washy, but he'll be wishy one day and washy the next. Anthony Kennedy said, and by the way, John Roberts and Sammy Alito signed on to this, this case is not about how the debate about racial preferences should be resolved. It is about who may resolve it. There is no authority in the Constitution of the United States or in this court's precedents for the judiciary to set aside Michigan laws that commit this policy of odors. Bull, said the robin, and he turned and walked away. So, in other words, the same court that said that the only way that bribery of a politician could ever exist in the United States of money, I want you to go and vote in favor of the Amalgamated Pollution Act because America and Jesus. And then the politician takes the big bag of money and goes back into the Congress and votes in favor of the Amalgamated Pollution Act in favor of America and Jesus. That would be, according to the court, impermissible. But, on the other hand, if you're that politician and you're just sitting there in your rocking chair, mother's paisley shawl, and a man comes down to you from the bank and says, sign here, and hands you a big bag of money, and says, you know, we got the Amalgamated Pollution for America and Jesus Act in Congress, and I sure would hate to be able to have to stop bringing you these big bags of money or anything. Well, you vote your conscience, Congressman. That's not bribery, according to the eternal optimists and unicorn sparkle pony fanatics of among the rats of the Supreme Court. So from now on, if there just happens to be a 14th Amendment problem somewhere, and voters go to the ballot box to decide that question, well, when they decide that that they're going to make sure that those 38% character deficits never get into the hallowed halls of Big Blue, well, it's just the way America works, because we are... Oh, really? Come on. You thought I was going to go all the way through a story? And see, all this ties together. It goes back to that whole Million White Men's March or whatever. Now, obviously, during the brutal and hateful days of slavery, days my ass, the years, the decades, the centuries of human brutality perpetrated by white people in the southern United States, granted, they did consider themselves whitely superior, but they weren't out there trying to create an exclusively white homeland where they would live separate. Because, see, white folks who want to live separate and apart, they're going to have to do all kinds of icky work that the white folks don't want to do in the first place, that they've always needed people of color to do for them because they're too otherwise miserable and lazy. And, of course, one of the ways to make sure that you've got some selectively brown people available to do the work you don't want to do is to make sure that they don't get into schools like Texas and UCLA and Berkeley and Michigan. Wolverines! Come on, I gotta work that. Really, next time I'm in D.C., I am not kidding. The next time I am in D.C., and I am no artiste, but the next time I'm in D.C., I gotta find somebody with enough talent to make me a really good-looking sign that can be put on a poster that simply says, the Supreme Court is infested with R, capital R, capital A, capital T, capital S. And then under the RATS, we have to have enough room to spell out vertically going downward, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Scalia. By the way, Shorty in L.A. says, vinyl, hey now, and when it gets bad, we just put a nickel on top of the stylus head. Oh, I know, been there. I don't know what to make of all this damn buffering, and I'm so sorry for it. No, no, it's not your device, it's not your cell, it's not your computer, it's not your tablet. It's my ability to get this little teensy-weensy, itsy-bitsy, next-to-nothing 64 kbps stream up to the White Rose stream servers. Are we being attacked? I don't know. But this problem seems to be at its very worst between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m., and then it just settles right down. Who'd figure? We have made it halfway through the program, and I didn't even play the Michigan fight song either. Gee, I wonder if the Michigan football fans object to affirmative action in, say, football and basketball recruiting. Wonder how they'd like to have a slew-footed tailback who runs about a 15-20-40. Nice and white in the backfield there for the Wolverines. You know, that is the way that we could, this could be just solved. If, say, John Beilein of the Michigan Michigan head basketball coach and whoever the head football coach is at Michigan said, okay, the football and the basketball teams are now going to be a direct demographic reflection of the will of the people, and we're going to have the same percentage of African-American players on the teams as are admitted in the average freshman class. The hue and cry and howls of outrage would reverberate all over the country. Let's do it at Texas, too. Let's do it at UCLA. Yeah, why not? I mean, let's just judge those scholarship athletes. Those people that we keep working for no pay. Wait, what is that called? Let's just judge them on the content of their character and not their ability to run the 40-yard dash or maybe read the quarterback or be able to fake out a cornerback or cornerbacks for that matter. You know why cornerbacks are cornerbacks, right? Because they'd like to be receivers, but they've got hands of stone mostly. Let's do that. Why not? Titanic intellect. So this kind of dovetails with what Dr. Bill's been talking about the last 2 days. And by the way, I again implore, I urge you to download Dr. Bill's program from yesterday and Dr. Bill's program from today and Dr. Bill's program from tomorrow, because he is he's talking about some pretty important stuff. And see, if you take any one of these cases that the Supreme Court has the rats have decided in the last few years, and you look at them in isolation, you can say, well, you know, that's too bad about that. But no, if you start looking at them as a whole, if you look at Citizens United and McCutcheon and the Voting Rights Act case and the striking down of Medicaid, of the Medicaid expansion in the Affordable Care Act case, and this the striking down of even the use of any race or historic origin data in admissions process, what you see is the Supreme Court of the United States slowly but surely trying to undo every progressive thing that has ever been accomplished in this country. And I have not gotten my hands on it yet. And it's a real pity that the Supreme Court did not provide a link to Justice Sotomayor's dissent. But it's my understanding she did reference the brutality of the majority. Because, well, majority rule does not guarantee fairness. Remember, Plato, because of what the Athenian democracy did to his teacher Socrates, despised democracy because it was nothing, it was little more than mob rule by the privileged. And that is apparently what the rats and Kennedy favor. Mob rule. Among other things, Justice Sotomayor said that, for one, she summarized her dissent from the bench, which pissed off the old men, because that just means that the justice dissenting is particularly incensed by the ruling of the majority. And she essentially said that the ballot plebiscite in Michigan had subjected minorities to a burden that aren't faced by other college applicants, and thus it violated the Equal Protection Clause, which is pretty straightforward analysis when you get right down to it. And you just wonder how far the right wing wants to go with this. So in Michigan, Wolverines! You can't consider whether somebody's black, Asian, white, Pacific Islander, Samoan, Alaskan, Native, Native American, Hispanic. You can't consider any of that. Well, that's a sign of the devolution of this country. How much longer, then? And you know it's coming. How much longer before some aggrieved dude says that some vagina person got his God-given place in trying to get into ophthalmology school? A year? 2 years? 5? 10? Is it already in the pipeline? And, of course, the right wing will pitch that as being a mark of true gender-blind society. Because, you know, people are already outnumbering the men people going to college in the first place, and that violates God's law for the order of things. I bet, really? Do you doubt that? Justice Sotomayor said today, and this is a quote, "The Constitution does not protect racial minorities from political defeat, but neither does it give the majority free rein to erect selective barriers against racial minorities." And this is the part that really stung, because then she got uppity, Justice Sotomayor did. And she stuck it in that dead-eyed Chief Justice John Roberts, and said, "The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to speak openly and candidly on the subject of race and to apply the Constitution with eyes open to the unfortunate effects of centuries of racial discrimination." By doing that, she had taken a 2000 statement of the R in rats and walked him upside the head with it. It was in 2007 that he said, "The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race." What a towering intellect! What a titanic intellect John Roberts is! And then he got pissy and wrote his own and he said, "People can disagree in good faith on this issue, but it similarly does more harm than good to question the openness and candor of those on either side of the debate." Oh, cry me a river, John. "She's not being nice to me. She's being uppity. Mommy!" Oh, wait, you're one of those vagina people, aren't you? We're going to be a long time. Getting over this rat's infestation through which we are suffering. You know, or not. Or not. Depending on what happens with this whole constitutional... Well, hell, do you realize what a constitutional convention can do? A constitutional convention can abrogate the entire Constitution in light of how the Constitution itself came into being. It would be a little bit of the chickens coming home to roost. Because, see, the Articles of Confederation contained a clause that said the Articles of Confederation could not be modified or abrogated without a, without a 100% vote by all the states. So they just called a constitutional convention and said, "Well, we're not doing that. We're just going to have us a constitution." See how it works? So we could be dealing with the outcome of the rats for a very long time, or maybe not at all, because one of the things that a constitutional convention can do is get rid of the Supreme Court and get rid of the U.S. Circuit Court and get rid of the District Court. Hell, maybe they could set up a court system that was driven by the Old Testament, like the Christian Reconstructionists want. Maybe we could have a constitution that says there shall be no more execution by lethal injection, no more execution by firing squad, by hanging, by electrocution, by gas chamber, that all executions will henceforth be perpetrated as provided for in the Old Testament by stoning to death. A constitutional convention can do that. Brought to you by the Koch brothers. they could get rid of the 14th Amendment. They could get rid of the 13th Amendment. They could take care of that whole pesky women people voting problem. I mean, this is a nasty little Gordian knot that we're facing, and Dr. Bill has been doing a magnificent job analyzing it. Wow. We miss you. We miss you, Dr. Thompson. Big darkness. Soon come. Get rid of the religion part of the First Amendment, Tim from L.A. asking in the chat room. Sure they could. And instead, they could, since this thing will be dominated by teabaggers, declare that America is a Christian nation. There is a sleazy, bilious, pus-filled bag of horrors waiting to be opened if a constitutional convention is. Yeah. So, lines are open. 304-658-3333 on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn. Any way you want to get into the program, everybody tweeting and emailing and Facebooking and whatnot about the streaming problems tonight, I'm aware of them. I apologize for them. I do not know what is causing them. But I do know that if we go too many nights of having, you know, $190 fundraising goal and we do like we've done thus far and raise $0, we won't have to worry about buffering at all. It won't be nothing to buffer. Just saying. So we're gonna. It is Tuesday, and the Green News Report has come down. And I think a break is in order. Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on the way. This is The Horn.
I know that I'm not to be, so before It's Tuesday, April 22nd, Earth Day 2014.
It's our 500th episode of the Green News Report. Oh, and it's also Earth Day.
All of those well-planned coincidences and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
If you talk to the fossil fuel companies, they would say any type of restriction in what they do would lead us to an economic apocalypse. If you talk to the scientists, they say by not doing it, we will have a climate apocalypse. I guess my question is, which apocalypse should I prepare for?
You should prepare for the apocalypse of the 500th Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it is, in fact, our 500th episode of the Green News Report.
Yes, I believe we said that.
It's also Earth Day.
Yes, I believe we said that, too.
But around here...
Every day is Earth Day here at the Green News Report. It is the 44th annual Earth Day, the annual celebration reminding people to take care of the only known planet in the universe that supports life, our little life raft in the vast emptiness of space.
Yeah. But more importantly... It's our 500th episode of the Green News Report. So I thought that we would take this short opportunity to sort of look back on the genesis of the Green News Report, what the hell we've been doing, and where the hell we're going from here.
Good idea.
And I want to say that our very first episode, by the way, on February 17, 2009, you were sick as a dog, and I was only slightly less. Dave, February 17th, 2009, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
The stimulus bill goes green. Also in our first episode... Our penchant for snarky comments was immediately very well established in a story that had to do with salmonella and peanuts.
Yep, here's what it sounded like. Peanut Corporation of America filed for liquidation after two plants were raided and the investigators found filthy conditions. And he didn't
smile. There's nothing funny about salmonella.
Well, I'm sorry.
Dirty nuts. Let me just mention that. So there you go. And the snarky comment was born.
Yeah, where would we be without some snarky comment to help bring all this green news together?
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, these are difficult stories to cover. You do a fantastic job explaining them, but hard sometimes, I think, for people to hear. So finding the snarky side helps.
Yeah, I agree. And along the way, in doing the Green News Report over these last 5 years, we've discovered great new friends like our friend D.R. Tucker. He's a former Republican columnist and a radio host who was himself a climate science skeptic until he actually read the science on climate change.
And after that, everything changed. He started realizing how he had been hoaxed by the right-wingers for all of these years. In advance of our 500th episode, DR started listening to our very first Green News Report over the weekend, and he eventually ended up tweeting all 499 reports. We thought we'd give him a call and ask him what the hell he was thinking. So, hey, DR Tucker, what the hell were you thinking?
I just wanted to hear a great six-minute segment. Both of you are the pioneers of communicating the science and the stories about the consequences of climate change that the corporate media simply won't cover. And I just wanted to sort of pay tribute to your accomplishments and on this, the 500th episode.
Yeah, well, that's very, very kind and way too nice, but thank you. We'll take it. Is climate change coverage getting better in your observation over these past 5 years?
Well, there seems to be slightly more coverage now than there was 5 years ago. The only problem is that... In terms of people who put the extreme weather events that we've had in the context of climate change, it's you and not a lot of other people. I mean, that's the remarkable achievement that you guys have, that you've been able to do it consistently while so much of the mainstream media does it inconsistently and in some cases not at all. I mean, you guys are like the anti-Chuck Todd, if you will.
The anti-Chuck Todd.
Yeah, I like that.
I will take that as high praise. Desi Doyen, and I'll ask you the same question I asked DR. Do you think climate change coverage is getting better over the years, and is it making a difference?
I think it's getting better. Not only is the corporate media finally starting to take notice for several years, but governments and people and communities and groups are working together and rising up and taking action on this.
Ever the optimist, I think the climate itself is getting so bad that I think the coverage will get better because, frankly, I think the mainstream corporate media will have no choice but to cover it. that's both a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
We started doing the original version of the Green News Report when I was sitting in as a guest host on the afternoon drive time show on the San Francisco radio station Green 960. And I thought, well, why don't we actually do some green news? You came in, read some green news. I heckled you. And that formula has pretty much stayed in place ever since. Congratulations on 500 episodes.
And to you, too. Here's to 500 more.
And thanks to all our affiliates and all of our listeners. Please stop by bradblog.com to help us celebrate this milestone. And yes, we still rely on your support to stay on your public airwaves.
And we'll be back with a regular Green News Report later this week.
Sounds dull. Until then, from bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your 500th Green News Report. Happy Earth Day.
Woohoo! I'm gonna tell everyone to lighten
up. I'm gonna tell them that. About 3 minutes before the hour as we proceed through this Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Congratulations. Congratulations indeed to our good friends Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on their 500th Green News Report. God, I wonder where our 500th program was. I mean, how many programs are there in a year? Let's see, 52 times 5. Wow, our 500th program was somewhere in. Probably around October 2006. Wonder if we've gotten to, wow, God only knows. The number of hours that have been served out by the horn and by the White Rose Society with never a bill sent is simply amazing. Takes a hell of a lot of work on Ben Birch's part, and if I dare say, a little bit of gumption to crawl in behind the microphone that many nights. And you know, now put that in perspective next to a Mike Malloy, who's been doing this more or less consistently since 1986. Mother, let's go to the phones. Line's still open, a couple of them at least. 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Well, thanks for having me on tonight, by the way.
Oh, there you are, Bill. Good evening.
Hello.
Howdy, howdy.
Yeah, well, it is. I'm getting a notice on my computer that, there's something wrong with blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, but it's not. It's
of course,
nothing wrong with your computer. Nothing wrong with your internet. Nothing wrong. No.
What am I doing? The method, it's closed, and when every time it opens, it throws me a...
Yeah, it's all me.
Something is being picked up. Well, I'll tell you what, Bob, I wish I could get there. I got this huge hammer, and I've used it on many times.
Well, I got a size 12 foot, and it hasn't worked.
It's one of my favorite lines about people bringing me really old TV sets that they were... I turned it on, and it was two white guys boxing. Because when you go back into professional boxing, you're going back quite a few years with that layout, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't Olympics. It was professional heavyweight, so you didn't see too many. Oh, I remember I was working in a knitting shop when Patterson fought Johansson and got his title back. I mean, that whole place shut down. Everybody in the place sat down with the radio, and the hell was working, you know? Just... listen to this thing. And of course, Muhammad Ali changed the whole thing. I mean, Joe Louis was a name we spoke with reverence when I was 7, 8 years old, you know.
You know, while we were in D.C.
Everybody's mind, he was the man.
While we were in D.C., Ferg watched a movie. I think it was entitled Muhammad Ali's Greatest Fight. And it wasn't about Liston, and it wasn't about Joe Frazier. It was about the battle that went all the way to the Supreme Court over his right to be a conscientious objector to having his hide hauled over to Vietnam to shoot at or get shot at by people with whom he had no quarrel.
Yeah, and Mark last night, Mark, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Smedley Butler a Marine general?
Yes.
Yep, and then, of course, the other guy that I really admire was the guy who was being ordered around by a guy that MacArthur, he had been MacArthur's chief of staff, and MacArthur gave this guy command of half of the U.S. forces, basically, that were advancing into North Korea. This O.P. Smith, Oliver Smith, he did not like the idea, you know, of advancing blindly into an area. And his famous quote was when he was able to lead that 1st Division out of what could have been complete annihilation, Bob. I mean, the Chinese were sitting up there waiting for him. And MacArthur and his pushing the buttons. He was, we're going all the way to the Yalu River, you know. Yeah. People who live in dream worlds. And that's just an example, because we have a whole bunch of them here who live in dream worlds, too. These
teabaggers
types who just refuse to see reality.
Well, the thing is, they're getting very close, Bill, to creating their own reality. The fact that we've got a sufficient number of states now calling for a constitutional convention, I mean, the creeping dread with which that fills me, I can't begin to tell you. Because if nothing else, since 1787, we've had the notion that we had some sort of consistent framework with which we were working, whether it was working well or not. And now the teabaggers. And this is understand, this is entirely a teabag-driven process. Michigan, we were talking about...
They're definitely a minority in Congress. They're a minority bunch with big mouths.
Well, they're a majority in the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
They absolutely are, you know, through a sort of twist suppression and gerrymandering and filthy Citizens United money, and, you know, the god-awful smear tactic commercials. But they're there. And there's the fact of the matter is, these 34 states that have now passed this call for a constitutional convention, damn. I mean, are Dr. Bill and I the only ones who are even remote, at least a little bit disturbed by this?
Oh, no, it bothers the hell out of me. If I wasn't standing so close to the exit door, I'd be really upset. You know, you get to a certain age, you say, well, I'm not going to be around to see this mess.
And one of the central...
You, but you're leaving a lot of people behind. You know?
One of the central themes of their carping and whining and carrying on is that they want a balanced budget amendment. You know, so America will live within its means. But, you know, that's just thinly veiled racism, Bill, for the fact that, you know, and it's also, what do you call it, economism or oppression or whatever of poor folks. You know, we're just tired of them Americans that ain't as good as us thinking they're Americans that's as good as us. And they never think about white folks on welfare. They never think about white folks who are the majority of people getting SNAP benefits. No, they're racists, and they are classists. Maybe that's the phrase I was looking for. They're classists. And so
you're right, classists, right?
Yeah, the America that these teabagging horses' rear ends want to create is an America where poverty reigns supreme, where we've got a sort of Calvinism on steroids, where wealth defines whether you are a member of the elect of the Almighty, where poverty is not something to be defeated, but rather something to be cherished as an indication of one's Americanness. I mean, I don't even remotely like the thought of the America that these freaks want to create.
if I'm not mistaken, Hamilton would be turning over in his grave with this sending of work to foreign countries and bringing the stuff back in here.
Well, sure, sure.
And
you know what? I think if you gave
if you could
somehow conjure Jefferson into the present and say, "Hey, Tom, look at all these asshats out here. Look at the guy with the sniper pointing at the agent of We the People of the United States, willing to blow him away because a squatter won't quit stealing from the United States." Tom, you want to retract that whole blood of tyrants and patriots and natural manure line, and Tom would look at you and say, "Oh yeah, I take it back."
Well, plant your garden in a piece of city land, Bob, and see how long you'll last. But here's a guy who's, how long has his family been doing this little?
Well, it turns out he's a complete fraud.
Grazing on government land.
You know, back when Sean Hannity was trying to foment a riot and trying to get people to shoot at the government agents, the agents of We the People, back when they were putting out this story that, you know, the Cliven Bundy clan has been on that land since the 1840s. But it turns out that, you know, since they are right-wingers, Bill,
Bullshit. They're
liars. They're just liars. They're you know,
yep.
Teabagger, liar, teabagger, right winger, squatter, liar. As Asa pointed out a little bit ago, you know, lo and behold, these people came up from Arizona to Nevada, and the land that the Bundys are on, at least the part that they actually have a house on, they purchased in 1948.
Well, it's within my lifetime, so it isn't that long in reality, you know.
Yeah.
In the reality of years. I was 5 years old when they bought it. Whoopee. You know?
Yeah, but they're patriots, Bill, and you're not.
Yeah, see, squatters back in the days of the old Western radio shows, they got in trouble. Yeah, there was the idea of just grabbing a piece of land and it's yours, and the thing is, the taxpayers are paying for this, and aren't they supposed to pay a certain amount of money, and they haven't been paying it? Isn't that part two?
Yeah, and not only have they not been paying it, they have been taken to court over it. This Craven Bundy creep has exhausted all of his legal remedies. He's lost constantly. And, you know, he just doesn't like the result. So he declares himself a sovereign citizen. And next thing you know, you got idiots with snipers or sniper scopes putting crosshairs on the heads of BLM agents.
You know, but these idiots don't know what kind of game they're playing. If they don't think they can be taken out, they're just plain nuts. You push hard enough, and the law will get you. I mean, God Almighty, the way it works is, what was the old story about the guys in the black suits, you know? That's what happened down in, what was it, Texas, where they had the guy holed up in the farmhouse? And the problem they had was they should not have gone in after him. You pick him up on the street. He's got to go out sometime, as the old story goes. He's got to appear somewhere. Or you cut off the supply of food to the place. Make him come out, is what it is. Make these people show up. Because what kind of morons would back him up? What kind of fools? Oh, well, Hannity's an asshole. I mean, between you and me.
And the four walls.
And the other guy... The guy who's screaming for the convention, the guy with the terrible radio voice.
Mark Levin?
God, now you... That idiot, yes. Levin.
And see, he's
a couple of them that did...
What was that title from an era back? We're all something on this bus? We're all loony or we're
bozos.
All... Yeah, we're all bozos on this bus. Well, that applies to the teabaggers, and guess who's driving the bus? that little troll with a voice made for print, Mark Levin.
Yeah. He's without a doubt one of the worst radio personalities I've ever heard. I've heard some good ones. I mean, the disc jockeys that I listened to were slick. One of the biggest kicks in my existence as a musician was when Dr. Bill Randall came to see me with his daughter, and she knew me. And he was a loud talker, and he made a remark that this guy's as good as Paul Butterfield, blah, blah, blah. Well, he could have been lying through his teeth, but when you hear somebody you listen to say that about you, boy, yeah, you know, thank you. But, yeah, these people, what kind of people are buying this? Is this, it's like we used to talk about when I was a kid, before college football was integrated down south, you know, when they had all white teams, we used to say, yeah, a team like Ohio State with the great players like Jim Parker and other guys of that ilk, you know, we often used to laugh at the Southern college football teams in the segregated days and say, well, they're passing up on some great players. And, you know, they're taking a lot of good, they've got a lot of good ones, but, you know. But then again, you notice how much stronger the teams have got since the days of, it's a great book on baseball, Only the Ball Was White, and how Dizzy Dean and his brother Paul, they'd form a team of major leaguers, and they'd go out and barnstorm all over the country playing against black media, you know, guys from the
yeah, and getting their, butts handed to them.
They all were drawing good crowds.
Oh yeah, the gate was wonderful.
Money talks. Yeah, money talks as usual. But I just don't know anymore. I mean, I'm in a bad mood. My one pair of glasses took a walk today somewhere, and I'm mad looking for them. But you know. Other than that, I actually cooked a pork roast with sauerkraut today. My God.
Oh my God, that had to be good. Oh, that's
it. It wasn't the best roast that I ever had.
But you put the sauerkraut around?
At West Side Market.
You put the kraut around the roast. Do you roast it covered or uncovered?
Yep.
No, covered?
Uncovered.
Uncovered?
I should have.
Oh, no, well.
In a slow cooker, yeah.
Oh man!
Even 4 hours.
Oh, that'd be some kind of good.
It's tender as hell, that's for sure. And I don't know what to pasta again.
I'll tell you what I love to do with a pork loin roast is just sort of slice a pocket into it and stuff cranberries and raisins and some onions.
Oh yeah.
And then wrap that sucker up real tight in foil. And then roast it in a pan covered like that for not low heat, long time.
Yep.
Oh, the oddly enough, apples and onions and they go together surprisingly well. And they just infuse the pork.
He used to always see a pig with an apple stuffed in its mouth, you know, years ago. I was almost a cliche. But anyway, that's my story now. Yeah, at least I'm happy to know it isn't my computer that's falling apart.
No. But we've been streaming pretty nicely for the last little while. So.
Well, I haven't tried it, but I'll try it. Although I'm probably going to cut away early since the Bruins and the Red Wings are playing up in Detroit tonight, so I'll have to.
Oh, that'll be a dandy.
Me and Detroit go back a long way. I mean, to go up there, I was up there in 67 after the Plum Street mess, the rioting and the fires, and went down to a beat-up office building, and there was a bunch of guys camped out in the building that were called the MC5. So I sat and talked with them and compared off brands of cigarettes, and John Sinclair, the poet. Sinclair had a lot to do with the Ann Arbor Blues Festival, but 69, I was there in 70. I didn't make the 69 festival, but it was a good place to be. I mean, Detroit and me got along fine. Oh, downtown Detroit, there was two places separated by a common wall. One was the Lafayette Coney Island, and the other was the American Coney Island. So you could go from one to the other. And that's another weakness, Bob. I don't know. I think you have the same weakness when it comes to chili dogs.
Tubular meat.
My daughter tasted the chili. Yeah.
That's one of those local things up in D.C., Bill. Up there, one of the meat packing companies came up with a thing that they intended as a breakfast sausage, and it's called a half smoke.
Yeah.
And people fell in love with them. And the epicenter of half smokes is an iconic location called Ben's Chili Bowl. I think it's over on U Street. That has a prominent place in the history of the civil rights movement. But just about every street vendor now sells a half smoke. And Ferg had never had one, and I got him one while we were there. And I said, you know, you want a half smoke? I'm getting a half smoke. Because, yeah, I do have that problem, Bill. Hi, I'm Bob.
Well,
I'm powerless over half smoke.
How it is when you're a young man.
So I said, I'm getting me one, Ferg. You want one? He says, nah, I'm not hungry. So I took a bite, and I said, here, just try it. And so he does, and the next thing I know, that it's gone. Those things are wonderful. Of course, I'm also a big devotee of the Chicago style with the arsenic green relish and the sport peppers and all that and the tomato slices. Oh God, with the poppy seed bun, I love those things. For a while there, the chain the drive-in Sonic was featuring a Chicago style dog, but I mean, it couldn't touch it.
Yeah.
Just couldn't touch it. And then of course there's the.
Yeah, somebody tried it here.
I don't know why it is, but
it's me to something else.
No, it's the Vienna beef hot dog, and all those condiments, and that wonderful poppy seed roll. Woof. But then again, like I was going to say, there's that little joint, and I've never found another place on earth even remotely like this little barbecue joint down in the little town in Alabama where I was raised. That does a brutally spicy yellow mustard slaw dog. Holy mackerel! I can sit down and eat a dozen of those damn things. Shouldn't, and luckily I'm too far away to be able to do it. But man,
Vienna has an outlet on Carnegie Avenue in Cleveland, and I'm trying to get down there because number one. Their corned beef is really good, too. And there's nothing like bringing home corned beef and making a good homemade corned beef hash. Because half the stuff you buy in these restaurants is you wonder what can it came out of, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of restaurants are like, a lot of these short-order places, they'll throw two eggs on top of something and call it corned beef hash with eggs, you know? Of course, as you see, I eat real well for a guy with a lot of problems. Yeah, right. Bob, I don't know whether what's worse, dying of boredom or watching what's going on with some of the people who are trying to just change this government around. And I like to come back to things like when Hitler was down there at the goddamn beer hall thing, who was down there with him but goddamn Ludendorff? Who was running the German army, you know, and the West. These people don't go away. They just, it's, what can I say? And of course, the fact that the Dulles brothers were trying to get us into Vietnam in 1954. Excuse me, Indochina. Let's go back and use the name that was correct at that point in time. And 10 years later that we're going into it up to our asses. And a bunch of guys who went over there never came back. What, 57,000?
Thereabouts.
For what? What was in it? It's like when when the Dulles brothers wanted us to a big, massive Operation Vulture, a big air attack on the Vietnamese that was surrounding Dien Bien Phu, and Matthew Ridgway, general and all, he told Eisenhower, there's nothing in this for us. Maybe it's a basic, simple, selfish rule. But for God's sake, if that rule holds, what's so good about the rest of it? And all these morons who talk about going to war in the Ukraine when your opponent has enough material to vaporize everybody. I mean, Bob, that was one of the most serious subjects in the world all my life was, once the Russians got the bomb and we had the bomb, and all of a sudden you begin to really look hard at everything. There was no bull about going to war for what, you know, for something.
Right.
And, it's ridiculous and it's scary. And you feel bad because you've got young children and you got grandchildren and I've got grandkids. But anyway, I'll let you go. But you want to keep me on the phone? I don't know if I can get you or not.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. I'll just keep you on hold if you want. Is that good?
Yeah, thanks.
All right, stand by. Take care, Bill. Have a good evening.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. Thanks.
All right, enjoy the hockey game. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Moving on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob.
Hey, Kevin, what's happening?
Hey, I'm well. So, this is my computer for the last 4 days. From Thursday to Monday afternoon, no computer, no nothing.
Oh, that sucks.
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't anything to do with my computer as much as the accessible software and the lack of help.
Oh, the access software?
Yeah. But I was glad to have it back because today one of the AATTP articles posted an article that said, what if Cleveland... How do you say his name? Cleveland Bundy?
Yeah. Well, Cliven. I call him Craven.
What if he had been black? And you mentioned Muhammad Ali and his prosecution for being a conscientious objector. And I thought, what if Muhammad Ali had been white and the heavyweight champion of the world?
Well, you think he would have had a nice high draft number?
That, and probably wouldn't have even had to serve in any capacity. They would have been happy to have him lifted up as American exceptionalism by being the heavyweight champion of the world. And it just been prosecuted. Had he been white and the heavyweight champion of the world. Now, if he'd been a poor white person, then, yeah, maybe he would have been prosecuted. But not both those things, not being white and the heavyweight champion of the world. And in this Craven Bundy thing, it's kind of the same thing. And the article by Americans Against the Tea Party talked about the MOVE group up in Philly that was wiped out back in 1985 because they took a stand against the federal government and the federal government had no problems, pardon the word, moving them out. And yet now you see the federal government doing exactly nothing to Craven Bundy. And I just, it's more of the same and it's irritating. And you brought up earlier in the show, what if it gets to a certain point? And I think that point is coming, but when it gets to that point, that's when we've got to take that same kind of stand ourselves, because that's all we have left. One of the other AATTP articles today was an old Porky Pig cartoon from back around 1939, where he was teaching children how to say the Pledge of Allegiance, and of course back in 39.
Yeah, there's no under God.
Right. And I thought, how sad it is that in 2,000 years plus of recorded history, how many times have we seen a nation that adopts a particular religion as a state-sponsored religion and what happens to it? And yet we're going down that same path today that so many other nations have gone down, and it will end in the exact same result. And yet, here we go. And it may not happen in my lifetime. I'm fairly happy it'll happen in our children. Fairly sure it will happen in our children's lifetime, where those of us on the left, and not even those of us on the left, those of us who believe in true equality will have to take a stand for that true equality. And right now, that usually doesn't involve a great cost. But as we move further and further down this path of nutcases claiming that the Christian religion, our nation was founded on the Christian religion, we must be a Christian nation, we must follow the Ten Commandments, never mind that they don't follow them, but we must follow them, then we're going to have to ramp up our opposition to it. And the saddest thing to that for me is that it doesn't have to be repeated. History does not have to repeat itself. But I unfortunately think it's going to. So.
Well, I don't think you think it, that's not some wild-eyed speculation.
No, that's what troubles me so much about it. You want wild-eyed speculation, listen to 5 minutes of Alex Jones. That's wild-eyed speculation. What I'm talking about is connecting dots A and dots B, and you get C.
Right.
And it's not a big leap. So, but I'm going to get off here because I have just about no voice left. And
yeah, you sound like your throat's a little stressed.
Well, I'm not sick. It's been getting this way for a while, and I would venture to say that a lot of it is due to the stress of the issues with my computer, the ongoing issues. This isn't something, in the last 5 days it's kind of gotten a lot worse, but this has been an ongoing thing with me, and it takes a toll on you. And it's taking a toll on my voice. Not that I've been yelling at people, but I just think all that stress,
Oh, sure.
It has to manifest somewhere. So, but anyway, I just wanted to get that out because it really struck me when you mentioned Muhammad Ali and his greatest battle, because I met Muhammad Ali when I was 22, 23 in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And that man, back then anyway, was much bigger in real life than you ever imagined him to be on a TV screen.
Oh, yes.
And
in more than one way.
Oh, yeah. I have lots of respect for the man. Maybe don't agree with his religion. I maybe don't agree with him on some things, but I have immense respect for someone that's willing to stand up as he did and say, "I ain't got no quarrel against those people."
Right. One of the most profound and powerful words in the English language is and continues to be no.
Anyway, I will let you go, and if you'll leave me on the phone for just a second until I can reboot my computer, because the voice went out on it just a moment ago while I was on the Republicans.
Well, we haven't been buffered up too badly lately, but who knows?
No, that's one of the issues with my computer is periodically I just lose the string, and I have to reboot it. And
But the thing is, Kevin, I don't know how much of that's you and how much of that's me, because I haven't kept an exact count, but I would say we have buffered up and the stream has crashed. Oh golly, probably in excess of 20 times since 6 p.m. Eastern.
Oh yeah, but this is an ongoing thing. This happens a lot during a show with no buffer. Say that, to give everybody a picture, I have a non-internet side and an internet side to my computer, and on the non-internet side, they provided me with a certain number of radio stations that I just can click on and get the stream. I don't have to go to the internet. And somehow I managed, when I first started listening to you, to put you in that non-internet side and be able to click on your show while doing other things with my computer. And, it's probably a little bit of both, to be fair to them, but I've seen it do it with other radio stations and, right now I ain't got a whole lot of respect for the people that make this software. I took the time to call England the other day wanting to talk to top management about my issues, and they still haven't called me back. And,
Don't hold your breath.
Exactly, yeah. And it's very sad because this system is very simple for a non-sighted person to use, and I would have recommended it in a heartbeat, not only to Bill but to other people, but I can't do it in good conscience. I just can't. Why would I want to invite someone to have the same problems I'm having? You know?
Yeah.
Now, maybe I'd recommend it to a teabagger, you know? Yeah, I'll put your stations into the computer and let the fun begin. But, you know, I couldn't do it in good conscience, seriously, to anybody, because it's just going 4+ days without a computer at all. I mean, I had no access to nothing. Phone numbers, emails, nothing. And, that's one day I can understand, maybe two, because it takes a while for people to get back with you, but four and a half days. And that's just not acceptable to me. But that stage we live in, because I don't know where, if I've heard you mention some of your trouble with your internet provider, and out here we've got only one cable system, and that's Comcast. So you can imagine the fun when I have an issue with my phone, internet, or TV cable. They're not as quick on the draw as they could be because they don't have no competition. I can't switch providers. I'm locked into one. You know, and that's what our country's becoming.
Remember, I mean, we are so far behind the rest of the so-called developed world in terms of internet deployment. It's not even close.
We're so far behind the rest of the world in so many things now.
No, that's true. That's true too.
When you and I were kids, say from 15 up to 25, would we ever believe where we are now? And
positively no, and negatively no. I mean, positively, I think we knew that there were massive changes in technology coming. I mean, geez, I remember it was August of 1973 when we got our first remote control color television set. It was our first color TV set at all, and my dad just decided to, go for the gusto, and rather than 10-year-old me sitting there on the couch going and changing the channels, It came with a little remote control.
Yep.
And do you remember remote controls from that era?
Not really.
It had three. The remote control looked a lot like the little non-pistol grip handheld Star Trek phaser.
Right.
And it had a metal grill in the front that had to be pointed at a receiver on the television set. And the channel changing was done by virtue of sound, not infrared, no, sound. There were three bars that generated either ultra or subsonic noise that was responded, and the channel changing knob physically moved. There was one button that gave you three levels of on-off, it was on and off and two levels of volume. And then there was an up channel button and a down channel button. And that was some seriously high technology. And you know, when you get older, and especially when your parents are gone, you think about the little meannesses you did as a kid. I wish I hadn't done that. But I found out innocuously enough one day that I could change the channels on the television set simply by rattling the buckle on my belt.
Oh.
And I would pop my little head out from around the kitchen and just go, and my dad would be sitting there, and the channel would change. And it absolutely drove him to distraction. Until he found out it was me. And then he just sort of, well, chased me around the house for. Come here, you! So I learned rattle in the belt. It was buffer. Rattle it every time you wanted it to change. And just from that to the next level of remote controls was a big deal. And I think we kind of knew that the game was afoot. When they started selling TRS-80s and Commodore 64s, and gosh, I think I was a freshman in college by the time, because I remember spending all night with a buddy of mine from high school playing a game called Zork.
Yep.
And the real live, honest to God computer nerds out there are going, oh yeah, Zork was great. And there were a million, 5 1/4 inch floppies, and you would change out floppies on the floppy drive, and of course, you know, the floppy followed the tape drive. And wow. So yeah.
You know what I'd like to see, I have heard about them, and I from a kid, but I'd like to see a wire recorder, the old wire recorders before you got the tape recorder. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would like to see one. Obviously, I can't visually see it now, but where would I go to do that? What kind of museum would that be in?
It's hard to say. Maybe a technology museum?
Yeah. I don't know of one other than maybe the Smithsonian. It's, you know... Where do you find those places? Because in that technology museum, God, there's got to be a goldmine of stuff there, like what you're talking about with the remote. And, you know, I can remember back about that same time, Bob, a friend of mine that I was in high school with, his parents had what had to be one of the first cell phone, and it was kind of a radio phone, but it was a cell phone, and it was a phone like a regular phone from back in the day that you had, and they had it in their truck, and they would pick it up and make calls to whomever, and it wasn't a satellite phone, you know, anyway, it was some sort of primitive cell phone that they had that.
Yeah, you know, there were people with car phones in their Mercedeses back in the, late 70s?
Yep.
I know by the mid-80s.
I remember it back about 1973, 74, because they owned one of the big strawberry farms down in Florida, and they pretty much had to have it. So, and I, you know, back then I was just amazed, being a teenager too, at, wow, they've got one of those in their car? I've heard about them, but I've never seen it, you know. And here we are today. I've got a handheld one that's no bigger than my palm, you know. And you want to talk about Star Trek-ish? Open up your cell phone one time and then compare that to Star Trek with Kirk or Spock talking to the Enterprise from some distant planet, you know. And, you know, it kind of boggles your mind, and that's the positive. And, it, you know, I wish we could focus more on the positive as a culture, as a people, as a world. But what stands in the way of that is the 1%. No one else is standing in the way of that. If the 1% would get on board with it and realize that they could make profit, God awful profit, without having to screw a person or pollute a stream or a river or destroy a mountain. But they're so bent on greed that they will one day destroy themselves too. And you can't get them to see that. So, you know, while I'd love to focus on the positive, I see too many...
Oh, I'm positive. They're doing their best to screw this country all the way into the ground. There's my positive.
At the same time, it'll take a little longer to catch up with them, but they're screwing themselves at the same time. And that's what's amazing to me. Because if you connect those dots to mountaintop removal, to pollution, to climate change, global warming, you know, sooner or later, there ain't going to be anywhere for them to hide either. And, you know, we may be well dead and gone when that happens, but I'll die with the knowledge that it'll catch up with them one day, too. And, you know, greed is a monster when you think about it, because any of us can be greedy. And it manifests in different ways. For some people, it's an addiction to gambling. And for some people, it's an addiction to destroying the planet, you know. So, but anyway, I'll get off my soapbox and let someone else talk here.
Yeah, you do fine with your soapbox, Kevin. I'll put you back on hold alongside Bill, and have yourself a good night.
Yep, and I'll only be on hold just a few minutes, just long enough to get the computer rebooted.
Okay, that's fine. Thanks a lot, Kevin. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Hey, it is 14 minutes before the end of the program, and we have brought in precisely $0 to keep this whole affair running. So it looks like tomorrow we will dealing with a prayer meeting Wednesday installment of the program with a fundraising goal somewhere around $340. Well, we got out of the hole for a little bit. Thank you, Robert, yesterday and everyone else. By the way, a note coming from Robert. I'm going back to the phones in a sec. Lines open. Jump in if you want. 304-658-3333. Note came in from Robert in Australia. Robert says, just so I don't give the impression that Australia is an amazing enlightened paradise, I mean, it's pretty good, Robert says, but sometimes, geez. I read this morning that Prime Minister Tony Abbott is to announce the purchase of 58 F-35 fighter jets at a cost of around $12.5 billion with another 14 to be purchased by 2020. Well, I guess who developed this thing? Lockheed, Grumman, Boeing, who? Whoever it is, they must have seen old Tony coming. Aren't these the same, Robert asks, aren't these the same planes that are decades overdue, nobody wants, and can't turn left? Those are the ones. Oh, y'all are going to love them. I mean, you wouldn't want a jet that could turn left after all. I mean, the next thing you know, people are marching around in the streets singing the Internationale. Robert Edson, yes, Tony Abbott is quickly turning out to be the worst prime minister ever. Link to a story called Tony Abbott's First 100 Days, What Have We Learned? I have a feeling it's not a good thing. While wasting time and money on complete nonsense like bringing back knighthoods. Really? Can't the wealthy Australians just, like, get online and play one of those RPGs where they get to be the Kinnigat of some castle? Oh, they're not kidding. From the Canberra Times, the Australian Prime Minister holds office in a system that makes him both vulnerable and extremely powerful at the same time. These characteristics have led Labour MP Jim Chalmers to describe the Prime Minister as like a bigger dog on a shorter leash rather than a smaller dog on a longer leash. And with a little bit of more of explanation than knighthood's affair is a case in point. Tony Abbott reinstituted knights and dames to the Australian honours system with little consultation other than with his Attorney General, a few friends, and presumably Queen Elizabeth. I mean, she is going to have to loan him the sword and stuff for whacking people on the shoulder, right? One hopes it's dull. That he did so without any consultation with most of his senior colleagues, many of them Republicans, shows Abbott's determination to act alone. Oh, dear God. that's reminiscent of something I saw just the other day from my old buddy Paul on my Facebook page. See if I can find it real quick. Ah, there it is. Exactly what I was after. Here, Robert Australia, you'll enjoy this. And this is for you, Tony Abbott.
Presenting His Most Royal Majesty, the King.
The King, Your Majesty.
The Sheriff of Nottingham, in gratitude for your faithful service, I shall knight thee.
Your Most Gracious Majesty.
In the name of my most royal majesty, I knight thee. Arise, sirloin of beef. Arise, earl of cloves. Arise, duke of Brittingham. Arise, baron of Munchausen. Arise, essence of myrrh, duke of magnesia, quarter of ten.
You are too kind, your majesty.
Earl of Cloves, Milk of Magnesia, Quarter of Ten. Oh, God. Well, you know, y'all just enjoy it now, Robert. Arise, Satchmo of Armstrong. Robert concludes saying, of course, he's going after pensions, too, Tony Abbott is, and wants to raise the retirement age to 70. You know, because Australians are living longer. Are they using that argument down there yet, Robert? So it looks like being a couple of interesting years under the current Liberal federal government. Yeah, may you live in interesting times, right? Oh, brother. Thank you very much, Thomas. Thomas got us started this evening. Thank you very kindly. So that takes tomorrow night's fundraising goal down to 330. Thank you very kindly. It is much appreciated. And thank you, Jenny. Jenny helping out. Jenny took us down to $310 for tomorrow evening. Again, it all is a massive help and a big deal. Oh, good. Quick note from Robert in Australia. Yes, I'm laughing. You got to keep that one handy for your for your royalist buddies or whatever. Rise, Earl of Cloves. Earl of Cloves. Oil. Baron of Munchausen. Royalty, please. This from Tim in L.A. About Clive and Bundy. The first time I heard the name Clive and Bundy, I was thinking it was an Onion story. You know, Bundy, as in married with children. Then I realized it was real. When I realized it was a true story, I started to think, something lefties do? Well, after reading the story about how Bundy didn't recognize the federal government and wanted to abide by Nevada's law, state law as per the Tenthers, and the birthers and the deathers and the booger eaters, don't forget them. Tim demand his rights as a U.S. citizen, even though we could probably deport him and put him in federal prison as a man with no nation. But I digress. Still thinking, since he does not recognize the federal government and Bundy is claiming that his great-great relatives were allowed to use public government for public land for grazing, what about the indigenous landowners who were on the same land before big government kicked them out and placed them in reservations? They too did not recognize big government, and they too were victims, so wouldn't the Paiutes have the right to kick Bundy off his land? So in the spirit of Horn Malloy rabble-rousing, I shot off an email to the local Paiute tribe in California asking them, will you folks go to the Bundy compound and demand your land back from the Bundy family? Then I read this. I-Team, Bundy's ancestral rights come under scrutiny. One word spreading through Bundy supporters and his armed guards is that what the federal government is doing to Bundy is exactly what they did to a Native Americans. They are literally treating Western United States citizens, ranchers, and rural folks like this are the modern-day Indians. We're being driven off of our lands. We're being forced into reservations known as cities, Justin Giles, an oath keeper from Alaska, said. The local Paiute Indians were forced into reservations by federal troops in 1875, at the point of a gun. 2 years prior, the tribe was promised the same land Clive and Bundy now grows his melons and until recently grazed his cattle. Tim points out even the teabaggers who are out there in Nevada are questioning Bundy's rights to be on the land because, the Native Americans were on that land long before the Bundy family. Many on Facebook are realizing that Bundy is being subsidized by the federal government as a rancher and capitalizing off the cattle he's selling. Teabagger welfare. The masses, including the government, including the teabaggers, realizing what's happening to Bundy happened to the Paiutes and arguably to the Mexicans when Nevada was a big part of Mexico. What started off the encroachment of big government is ending up to be hypocrisy, and the veil of racism is slowly being displayed. If the Indians were victims of big government, as oath keeper Justin Giles said, the folks from the Paiute family are reminding him that this is their land. Oh, and if Bundy complied with federal rules and didn't open his trap, he would have remained on the land unscathed by assholes like me. Gee, I love teabaggers. But remember, they're not saying that they're in sympathy with the Paiutes, Tim. They're saying that they are the new Paiutes, okay, being driven into cities. There's a big difference between being driven off habitable, sustainable land and into an unsustainable part of the country, say like from the hills of Appalachia in North Carolina and Georgia and Tennessee, into the dusty, barren nothingness of Oklahoma. So, no, there's no sympathy there, Tim. It's the white folks that are now the oppressed. You can expect that white oppression meme to propagate like crabgrass here in the next generation or so as white people become a minority in this country. They are going to scream like the pigs that they are. Jack in Shreveport pointing out, arise! Yeah, they'll be wanting Hassan Pfeffer next. Inside joke from a true fan of Warner Brothers Chuck Jones cartoons. If I did not know this was Hassan Pfeffer, I'd swear it was a carrot. Yeah. Just a couple of minutes left. Let's get one more phone call in. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
I do have the money order. I will send it in I'll get it in tomorrow. I'll send the mail in tomorrow. But anyway, what I was going to talk about, what you were talking about, was they want to have a constitutional convention. Are you serious?
I ain't kidding.
That's crazy. I mean, even things the way they are, I mean, they have control pretty much.
Don't kid yourself. I mean, time's running short, but I encourage you to check out Dr. Bill tomorrow between 3 and 5 your time, 4 to 6 hours. He's been talking about this since Monday. They're not kidding. But don't kid yourself. It's not like if there's a constitutional convention, the proud progressives are going to march into it and say, cool, we'd like some equal rights for women language in there and some non-discrimination against gay people and trans people, and we want to make sure that we re-enshrine the Civil Rights Act right into the body of the Constitution. Oh, no, that ain't happening at the Koch Brothers Constitutional Convention.
It's going to be just money and power that's going to control everything, just like the U.S. Supreme Court now with the, money equals speech, and real quick.
Oh, yeah, and that's another thing that ain't happening. Nobody's going to overturn Citizens United or McCutcheon or no. But I'm sure they will have a few days of debate on whether or not to order up an execution squad for President Obama for the evil communist Obamacare.
Well, I'd just like to see if the left could get in control and they could turn the tables, and I'd love to hear.
Oh, that, yeah. But don't sit around waiting for that. Hey, Jim, I'm sorry we had so little time, but we got to get out of here. We are seconds away from Rick Smith. Take care.
Check you later.
Bye now. Yeah, really, seconds away. Thanks to those of you who helped out this evening. Thanks to Jenny and Thomas. Thank you very much. Time for Rick Smith. Bye, y'all.